Today on Straight Talk Africa, the Panama Papers. Politicians and celebrities, alongside hundreds of their sycophants, relatives and business connections, have been exposed by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, who are in the process of analyzing and publishing the findings. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, May 25th. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about the Panama Papers' impact on Africa.
And coming up later on this program, we'll share your thoughts on our topic du jour. That's through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. Hope you'll stay with us.
The Panama Papers financial scandal surfaced in April 2016 with 11.5 million files from the database of one of the largest offshore banking companies, Mossack Fonseca. My colleague Esther Githui Ewart has more.
Soon after the papers were leaked, the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists spread the word on how rich people across the globe, including political leaders, celebrities, their families and close friends, exploit tax havens. The leak elicited shock and outrage. Tom Caramon, Managing Director for Global Financial Integrity, explains how tax evasion is impacting emerging countries trying to eradicate poverty.
This is far more than all the foreign aid and all the foreign investment that goes into those countries every year. So it's a critically important problem.
The leaked information revealed big names in Western countries as well as Africa. African governments have been borrowing heavily from global financial institutions and from developed countries. In many cases, they are unable to repay the debts on time, which as a result is sinking the continent deeper into debt. Judith Tyson is a financial specialist with Overseas Development Institute.
And there were two main drivers of that. One is that many countries are borrowing simply too much relative to the size of their economies. But secondly, governments are also borrowing in US dollars. The last year, many African currencies have depreciated very sharply against the dollar, and that means the value of that debt in local currencies has grown. We've calculated it's grown by over $10 billion in the last year.
The scandal is receiving renewed attention after a database documenting hundreds of thousands of offshore accounts handled by Mossack Fonseca, the Panama law firm, was availed to the public via the internet early this month. The list of those named from Africa is long. Among them are Janet Desiree Kabila Kyungu, the twin sister of Joseph Kabila, the president of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenyan Deputy Chief Justice Kalpana Rawal, who allegedly used her shell company to buy and sell multi-million dollar homes in London, Kodjo Annan, son of former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, Brigadier General Emmanuel Dahiro, spokesman, physician, and security advisor for Rwanda's President Paul Kagame. Experts say the drain on government coffers is massive, and it will be difficult to recover the money. Siri Muliani Indrawat of the World Bank Group.
Without international cooperation, it's going to be very hard to actually chasing this tax avoidance. You can see even here in the United States.
Coupled with political conflicts, these debts have left a lot of Africa's populations with little to no food, and unemployment among youth is rising. The emergence of terrorist groups like the Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram is worrying. Security experts say tighter rules will make it harder for terrorists to move money for their illicit activities. Michael Rubin of American Enterprise Institute explains.
That's what gets so challenging to track. I mean, the money changer in Mogadishu or the money changer in Tehran, how are they getting their money? Is it coming in suitcases rather than are they hiding it offshore in Panama? That's what the major concern is with the people that try to counter terrorism finance.
The impact of money siphoned out of Africa is huge. Lack of employment is fueling political and ethnic conflicts, creating huge refugee populations. Not much has been done since the Panama Papers leak, But some countries like Zimbabwe say they're investigating.
We are asking all members.
African Union Chairperson Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma says the African money kept in foreign banks should be repatriated to the continent. Offshore secrecy is complicated, and there is a gray line between tax avoidance and tax evasion, and those involved are able to hide their identity. Esther Githui-Ewart, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Esther Githui-Ewart, of course, for that report. Joining us today, our distinguished guest, in fact, is our distinguished guest right here, Ray Choto, Senior Editor, VOA Zimbabwe Service. I have to say, Ray, that at least for the first time in the last 15 years, the first time, in fact, that I'm having the opportunity to host you.
You're welcome, Shaka.
You're most welcome, too. And joining us live via Skype from Toronto, Canada, is Dr. David Himbara, author, consultant, and analyst of the Rwandan government connection with the Panama Papers. Well, it's a pleasure, of course, having you on Straight Talk Africa. Another time, of course, David Himbara.
Thank you, Shaka. Thank you, listeners. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Last but not least is Tabu Butajira, Associate Editor, The Daily Monitor, an independent Ugandan newspaper, who joins us on the telephone from the capital, Kampala. Thank you very much, Tabu, for joining us from Kampala.
Thank you, Ndugu Shaka, for hosting me, and good afternoon to you in Washington, D.C.
You're most welcome. Let me come to you immediately, Ray, since I have you right here sure. in the studio. We obviously watched and listened to the package. Why are the Panama Papers being characterized, among other things, as a major scandal?
It is a big story, really, that is coming out of Africa. And for the first time, here is a group of journalists, more than 370 journalists, who pulled their brains together to investigate the Panama Papers. And in Africa, there were a couple of them, more than 15 or so, who participated, including my brother Tabu on the line. It is a big story because a lot of money has been taken out of the country or out of the country without the knowledge of the ordinary person, without even the knowledge of the government. So it's a crisis that needs to be resolved. People are taking advantage of the loopholes within the systems to move money from one continent to another. And that needs to be dealt with.
Now, wait a minute. How can you possibly say that people are taking money out of a country without the knowledge of the government, when, in fact, some of the people involved are very, very influential, very, in some cases, senior government officials?
I totally agree with you. In some cases, yes, there are some senior government officials that are involved. There are also some cases where you are dealing with the international criminals who study the laws of a particular country, go into a country in the name of trying to do some investment, get the money, don't pay any taxes, and get the money out of the country without even paying a dime to that country. That is illegal, and the government may not be knowing. Yes, we're talking about corruption in Africa, where certain individuals or government ministers might be aware of the whole process. But from what we have got when we went through the data, you know, there is a lot of material that is showing that there are a lot of loopholes within the system in Africa that needs to be plugged.
Now, David, in the past, of course, we have associated with secret accounts, bank accounts, with the nation of Switzerland. Everybody tells you about Switzerland and some other countries. The last thing, frankly, one would have thought was to be told about Panama, which obviously has the reputation of the Panama Canal. Were you surprised when you heard about this?
Is it me, Shaka?
Yes, please, David.
Oh, absolutely. Panama, indeed, would have been the last thing one associated this with. I, too, always associated Panama with the canal, not with the banking scandals.
Now, why is this being dubbed or being, in fact, called as a major banking scandal, a major scandal, as a matter of fact? I mean, we've heard that, for example, these folks who took their money to Panama have, in fact, not violated
in the laws. There's nothing illegal about it.
Well, in the case of, first of all, with regards to political leaders, a number of political leaders, it's not actually them that have been named as having opened accounts, but it's people close to them, associates, assistants, who could possibly not have been able to have money to open foreign accounts. That is also true in the case of Rwanda. We have Emmanuel Ndahiro, who at the time was a military spokesman and an assistant to the Vice President Paul Kagame. And along with Ndahiro, we have Hatari Sekoko, who is a business person in Rwanda. So here, just like Putin in Russia, it's not him who opened the accounts, but it's the associates who opened these accounts. And what is extraordinary in the case of Rwanda is that, unlike other countries, no single newspaper, no single NGO, no single academic, no single anybody would dare even talk about this issue. Absolutely nothing, zero. So while other regimes, while other governments have even fallen and other leaders have been taken to task, here we have a situation where no one would dare raise a finger. Actually, it was only the government of Rwanda itself, I think, embarrassed that 3 days after the story broke, that issued a two-sentence statement to say that it did not break any regulations.
That is correct. Now, you talk about Rwanda, and of course, you raise the issue of one Dr. Emmanuel Ndahiro, who the last time checked, of course, studied medicine at Makerere, and is supposed, therefore, to be a physician. Certainly doesn't seem to have been a banker at one time or another. How does he end up, you know, being involved in this huge banking scandal? I mean, a person like Hatari Sekoko, I can understand, because at least you refer to him as a businessman.
Yes. What we have here, by the way, is that these names keep appearing. It's not the first time that Hatari Sekoko and Ndahiro have surfaced in scandals involving President Kagame, or then Vice President Kagame. There was also another case of two aircrafts, two planes, one costing $50 million, that were registered in South Africa, that were said to be owned by these fellows. But of course, it's not possible that Sekoko or any government official would own a plane costing $50 million. These are, of course, directly linked to the president of Rwanda himself. Also, all these are just games.
I see. Well, now we'll pause for a short break, and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Panama Papers. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
Thank you very much. Of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Tabu, are you there?
Yeah, I am, Shaka.
Now, Tabu, very briefly, walk us through the way in which you found yourself involved in these Panama Papers.
My day of involvement with the Panama Papers reporting began in November last year, when I met Will Fisborn of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists at a journalist workshop in South Africa at the University of Witwatersrand. And from that conversation, we established a professional relationship, which has, of course, endured in time. And therefore, after building confidence, he did look me in on a major project that the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists was doing, and this was related to the Panama Papers. And at that time, every discussion was extremely confidential, and I was subjected, like all other collaborating reporters, to the operating procedures and the commitments that we had to undertake, one of which was actually confidentiality, and two, to agree on a timeline when we all begin to publish the stories. And I should say that it was amazing that all collaborating journalists, almost about 427 of those on the African continent, were able to abide by the timeline when it was agreed that we would all start getting out the material. And so in the African context, we do have the African Network for Centers Investigative Reporters, or ANCI, which is based in South Africa, that helped with decoding the highly technical financial documents and giving meaning and using open source data to verify that information. And ICIJ continued to provide technical support and also guidance in terms of how to make, how first of all to search relevant documents among a cache of more than 11 million and how to make sense of those, and networking the reporters to get and share information and comments from people who were either adversely named in those reports or people who held accounts abroad. And in the case of the story that I did, the first story that I did regarding Heritage Oil and Gas Company, using the Fonseca Mossack law firm to relocate its business from to the Mauritius in order to avoid payment of tax that the Uganda government was laying on its sale of interest in the Ugandan oil field. Heritage had initially declined to respond directly to the request of the Daily Monitor newspaper where I work, and we were only able to get their comment on that story through The Guardian, because there was another journalist at The Guardian newspaper of the UK who was also collaborating on the project. And of course, we have, as a matter of fact, there had to be multiple stages of online security verification that enabled us to transact business or communication among ourselves and with ICIJ and ANCIR in South Africa without breaches.
Now, Tabu, if, for example, an ordinary Straight Talk Africa viewer or listener through the radio stream were in fact watching or listening to this program, what would you say that this story is really so important, to such an extent, that it affects him?
First, it is the very fact that individual journalists actually networked and produced content that ordinarily has been preserved, if you like, of legacy media houses. The publication of these stories by media houses was as a result of the effort of individual journalists, and the media houses were not involved initially as institutions. And I think that sort of breaks the walls and monopoly of legacy media. So that's one important element. But also, two, if you know what happened in Iceland and how in Britain the Prime Minister, you know, had to struggle to defend the investment that his dad had registered under the Panama, which was revealed in the Panama Papers, you can understand that the impact of the stories were wide-ranging and across the globe. And I think in that sense, probably, it is a leak, which obviously you can compare to the Snowden's, if not higher. So, broadly speaking, on those bases, and there's still continuing stories coming out of the Panama Papers, and at this point, it is too early to predict fully what impact the reporting will have.
Now, Ray, what about you? How did you, in fact, find yourself on board?
I've been a member of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists since 2001 when I was at Stanford University. Mm-hmm. So I've remained as a member, and my participation in this project, I've been wearing two hats as a member and a partner being part of the VOA, and a member as Ray Chodo, as a journalist who is a member of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. That's how I got into this investigative program. Mm. But I wanted to clarify a few things when we were talking about having the money put to Panama. There is nothing wrong with it and things like that. Here's the reality. Setting an offshore account is not a criminal offense, but it is how it is being done. In our investigations, we established that there were people who were doing what we would regard as illegal, to have the money transacted from the countries where they were and the money ending up in these tax havens, be it in the British Virgin Islands, be it in Panama, be it in the Isle of Man. There are so many scattered all over the world. They were not following proper laws which allowed them to move money from one jurisdiction to another. There are also the anti-money laundering laws which were being violated by these individuals. You're talking about the drug dealers, mm-hmm. who are also involved in moving funds from one jurisdiction to another. So there is an element of a crime being committed as far as the Mossack Fonseca documents are concerned, because they actually went all their way to help these guys to set up banking accounts in jurisdictions which they thought it would be safe for them to put their money there. But knowing that they were violating certain laws that have to do with the movement of money from one country to another. So international laws, actually, when it comes to the movement of money, were violated, and that's a criminal offense.
Now, when it comes to celebrities, at least soccer celebrities in Europe, we know that they obviously earn tons of money. They have deep pockets. But what about the politicians, for example, like in Africa? What about the leaders in Africa? Where do they get this money that they take to a country like Panama from? Where do they get this money from? Where does it come from?
No, Africa is a rich country. That's
rich
one thing for
in
sure.
In terms of
it has
resources.
Got all resources and everything, and people come to invest. So there is a lot of corruption where you have people coming with money. They corrupt the African leaders, or the African leaders actually putting their hands into the budget, national coffers, taking the money and putting them in Swiss accounts and things like that. So, yes, there is money. That's why Africa is becoming poorer and poorer, because the money that is leaving Africa is not coming back. This is what we call illicit financial flows. Once the money is gone out of Africa, it's not coming back.
That money is creating jobs, in places like Panama.
It is, yes.
And probably in Europe and North America.
It is.
It is building infrastructure.
It is.
And of course, the reverse is true on the African continent, correct?
There has been no money to develop the country.
No money for service delivery?
Nothing. You hear people not having access to health because the money has been channeled out. Interestingly, if you look at all these tax havens, their economies are driven by offshore banking. What does that mean? If a country is surviving on offshore banking, it means foreigners are coming in to bank into that country. And then once the money is in that country, the banks then lend monies to international organizations and they make profits out of it.
And the interest, economies of course. Are
so, yes, yeah. But meanwhile, Africa is not getting a penny.
Very interesting. In Africa, you often find that the political elite, for example, they are so contemptuous of their own educational system to the extent that they don't, in fact, let their children attend those schools, which they say are for everybody, like universal primary education, universal secondary education. They send their children to Europe, to South Africa, to North America. Of course, they don't, of course, seem to, frankly, apply back or to invest in education at home. Is it possible that this money, if it wasn't, in fact, being banked in Panama or Switzerland or what have you, that perhaps Africa, in fact, would have no problem with service delivery, that the quality of education would be probably just at par, you know, with other countries that meet international standards?
There are a number of factors that we need to look at. There is lack of political will within the African continent itself in trying to address its own things. Hence the tendency of taking out the money and the resources out of the country, because some people feel it's not a safe place to be, including the politician who is in charge of the country. They would rather want or feel safe to have their money outside Africa, which is very unfortunate. Which is unfortunate.
Why isn't it safe?
This is what I'm talking about. There is lack of political will in Africa to address some of these problems. They can be addressed if people are serious about the problems that they are facing. If people really know that we are in Africa and as Africans, we need to do things in an African way and keep all our resources in Africa to develop Africa for the benefit of Africans, issues will be resolved. But look at it right now. You are talking about leaders who put their money outside Africa. Their children, they go there. When they've got a headache, they fly to Europe. They fly to any part of this world where they can get treated. But the ordinary person in Africa who does not even have a passport suffers. They don't have access to good education. They don't have access to, you know, good health facilities. So at the end of the day, these guys are siphoning the wealth at the expense of the ordinary person. Shaka. Those rural people in the rural communities. I'm pretty sure my brother wants to chip in here.
Yes,
but
please.
That's where the big problem is, that all the resources being taken out of Africa, they are not coming back. I'm happy that former South African President Thabo Mbeki, through the panel which he sits on illicit financial flows,
for the African Union.
Yes, he is trying to push this agenda to ensure that all the money that has been channeled out of Africa is given back to Africa. But that needs also international understanding and commitment, so that those who have been receiving these funds.
His report, in fact, says that about 50 billion US dollars each year.
It could be more.
And in fact, in the last nearly 50 years, at least $1 trillion.
That could have done wonders in Africa.
Very
so, unless and until there is that commitment also on the international, also on the part of the international community also, to see that if they are receiving money that is ill-gotten, it should go back to where it comes from, rather than disadvantaging the poor people of Africa.
Very interesting. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Thanks, Shaka. Our audience had a lot to say on this one. So still to come, we'll reveal some of the insightful feedback we've received through our social media platforms. But for now, here is our letter of the week.
Yahya Amel Gumel from Nigeria writes, the use of big companies and offshore accounts by the wealthy to evade paying taxes is a serious issue globally, especially with the damning revelations of the Panama Papers, which unearthed the level and scale of the problem. It's incumbent upon the international community to come up with tougher legislations to halt this phenomenon, which negatively impacts the world economy.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
I wanted to present music and a side of American culture that is most important to me, that is a part of who I am. They're gonna get some incredible performances. That's one of the things I love, bringing these artists in so you can get to see them do what they do. It's soul music, and that's what music is. It's that which comes from the soul.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. The so-called Panama Papers affair is getting renewed attention as a huge database of documents linking rich politicians and celebrities with offshore tax havens goes online. The documents confirm what has been suspected a long time, that the global elite use shell companies to avoid paying taxes on their wealth. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, asking, how do you feel about the wealthy using shell companies or offshore accounts to avoid paying taxes? Well, we asked the question, and you showed us how passionate you are about the topic. But before we dive into your comments, let me remind you that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA, the Panama Papers. And if you haven't yet, please do follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. And speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Emmanuel Cacelli, who says, this discourages loyal taxpayers and people. The respective governments should interfere vigorously. Well, another tweet from Wako Joel in Uganda says, these shell companies that connive with African leaders to flee its citizens should be exposed. One more tweet while we're at it, this time from Nana Kofi, who points out that such perpetrators should be brought to justice and made to face the full rigor of the law. Well, let's now turn to our Facebook followers and go to Esau Simutowe from Zambia, who posted this comment on our wall. Tax avoidance is a serious thing that brings sadness to me, he writes. Governments depend on taxes in order to provide services to the people and help poor families rise out of poverty. By failing to pay their fair share of taxes, the wealthy push more people into poverty, and the income gap widens as the poor are still taxed on their small incomes. It's a serious human injustice that must be fought. Well, this is absolutely well said by Esau in Zambia. Shaka and guests, your take.
Very interesting. David, your reaction.
Yes. you know, Shaka and colleagues, the money, the economic impact of this money is that you commented on is one thing. Like, you know, $50 billion leaving the continent annually, that is in the same range as foreign direct investment coming in. So canceling one another. No, this much we know. But I think what we need to pay more attention to is the political angle. How is it that in these countries that have been highlighted in the Panama Papers, say for example Angola, DRC, and Rwanda, touching on top leadership, But because of fear, there is absolutely no discussion. So what we're dealing with here is that not only are these countries hemorrhaging economically, but politically, you have actually societies that are quite literally in prison. I repeat that. You have actually countries in prison. If you have a country, say in DRC, where the sister of the president is named, but when a newspaper mentions her name, they're threatened that they're actually be thrown in jail. Then in Rwanda, like I said, where no one would even dare mention, later on discuss. Then you have a situation in Angola where you have like oil minister implicated. Obviously, a minister belongs to a cabinet headed by the president. So I think we are actually in dark ages politically where really, we are not in the same league whereby you have, leadership held accountable. Societies cannot even talk about this issue. This is a tragic, in fact, it's a political tragedy.
Very interesting. Mariama, do you have any more audience reaction?
Absolutely. We'll go to another comment from Patricia Namdi, speaking of Uganda. She's writing to us from Uganda. She says that when the wealthy fails to pay their taxes, the common man suffers. People with smaller businesses are forced to pay higher taxes, which is not, absolutely isn't fair. The international community, she says, needs to find a solution to this problem. Think we can look at one more comment, this time from Martin Wugol, who writes, I know that whoever tries to avoid paying taxes is an unpatriotic citizen. That's quite an interesting take that I haven't thought about before, but Shaka and guest, you're taking there.
What about you, Tabu? Can you react to that, please?
No, absolutely. The comments on social media raise the fundamental question. Because when the most gifted, the wealthy, don't pay tax, one of the things that happens, obviously, poor, struggling economies like this one of Uganda, therefore lack the resources to invest in public works. That will be one of the impacts. And in Uganda's case, its GDP to tax ratio has been hovering at about 13%, which is the lowest in the African community. The second aspect is that those who actually pay their taxes are taxed more in order to plug the gaps left by the wealthy who are not paying. Of course, from the business perspective, every entity would like to pay as little or little tax or incur as little cost as possible in order to increase the bottom line or the profit margins. And so it is, if you like, in their interest to look for where they can pay the lowest tax rate. Frankly, of course, we know some of the tax havens such as Luxembourg or Switzerland that you referred to are in the West. And I think that countries where these monies actually end should take keen interest and actively engage with the governments of the countries where these monies are coming from so that they are returned. And if that does not happen, as long as they provide a safe haven, there will be a motivation at the local level in countries like in many African countries where the institutions are weak, where the wealthy are not sure of the political security, and where in some cases the ruling class is also uncertain about the security of themselves and of their investments in their own country. The temptation obviously will be for them to have this money elsewhere other than in their own country. So there's a governance aspect which then flags the insecurity for individuals who are in many countries to invest their money abroad. But there's also a question of weak institutions where they are not able to rein in on people or investors who choose to expropriate resources of these countries, investments in tax havens or elsewhere.
You know, Tabu, when the papers, the Panama Papers were leaked, there was a profound reaction, you know, throughout the world, especially in Europe. You cited an example, for example, in Iceland, where, in fact, the prime minister was forced to resign, correct?
That's correct.
What about Uganda? Do people really take it seriously when you interact with people? Do they know what you are working on? And if they do, what is their reaction? Because we really haven't heard much from that part of the world.
That is true, but also, as I did indicate at the start, that actual reporting on this is still a continuing process. And it is easier for people to take immediate interest if the reporting is not issue-based and is personality-based. Obviously, the temptation is to hold those in power accountable. So if the reporting, as in the case of the story that I did, has not yet identified any of the executives, for instance, or any of the elite in the leadership of the country, people still think that it hasn't touched the right note, if you like. And my sense is that every aspect of people, and it's not, as David raised, I think, earlier, that it's not entirely legal, you know, or criminal, indeed, for people to try to avoid tax or pay the least amount, which is what the tax avoidance is about. But the most important aspect is that Biden now that imposes on the country where people are practicing this. And so in terms of impact, yes, I do know that there was a reaction by the Ugandan government indirectly through other ways that I think at the moment I am unable to disclose in response to the story that I published. Obviously, we are going to publish more stories on the Panama Papers. And the thing I need to raise is that not all documents will immediately show who the owner of this particular investment is. And it takes time to link the investment to the actual owner because most of it is disguised and different people are registered as trustees. And making the connection to an actual office holder is a highly technical thing and you need to get it right because the moment you get it wrong, you can also be in deep trouble.
I understand. Well, Mariema, thank you so much for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thank you, Shaka, and that will do it for today's segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Just sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. We are at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. Or simply watch us on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the 25th anniversary of Eritrea's independence. Join Shaka Sali, his panel of guests, and me as we talk about the East African nation. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back, and today we are talking about the Panama Papers' impact on Africa. Our distinguished guests are Ray Choto, Senior Editor, VOA Zimbabwe Service, Dr. David Himbara, author, consultant, and analyst on the Rwandan government connection with the Panama Papers, and Tabu Butajira, Associate Editor, the Daily Monitor, an independent Ugandan newspaper. Well, gentlemen, I have to say frankly that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to interact with you on Straight Talk Africa.
You're welcome, Shaga.
You're most welcome. Thank you, David.
Likewise, indeed, brother.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Let me come to you again. Thank you, Tabu. Let me come to you again, Ray. Earlier you said that part of the reason why these governments are not acting decisively is because you said they lack political will. Let's talk about your country, for example, Zimbabwe. People went through many years of liberation struggle. You had a rebel prime minister called Ian Smith, who obviously in the mid-60s declared the unilateral declaration of independence, which was Southern Rhodesia. And people, you know, they armed themselves and they organized, mobilized, and fought for what they said was the freedom and the independence of their country. How can you possibly question those leaders, really? Are you suggesting that these people are not nationalistic at all? Are you suggesting that they lack patriotism?
Well, my understanding of what is going on in my own country is that people fought, yes, for the liberation of their country. They are independent. As much as they are independent now, they are not independent in their own country. You look at people who try to express themselves freely. They get beaten by the police or arrested. People want to just have a peaceful demonstration. You know, the police come to harass them. There is the breakdown of rule of law. There is the disregard of the respect of human rights. So here's a situation where you were talking about, looking at what is happening in Iceland, where people revolted against their prime minister, and there is deafening silence in Africa. People start to think, the moment they are going to the streets, what's the next thing? I'm going to be beaten, I'm going to be killed. Is it worth it to do that? I think that is sort of scaring people. Also, too, I think the level of understanding human rights also needs to be put in proper context so that the citizens are aware about their rights. If we are talking about money being taken out of their country and being stashed somewhere which they will never get it again, what is their responsibility as citizens? Should they just sit down and watch? These are some of the issues that people need to be told. We are talking about politicians, Shaga. We are also talking about international corporations that have been false invoicing the countries, meaning to say that whatever they are exporting, they are not giving a proper figure.
But they are sharing with some elements within the ruling elite.
Which becomes handy for those people. But for the ordinary people, they are seeing these things happening. But whether they don't want to react or they are powerless to react is an issue that we need to look at. But the starting point is that the journalists are simply giving them information. This is what is happening. What they have to do with that is up to them. But the information, they have it. Come tomorrow, whoever will be the president of Zimbabwe, the names will be there. So the journalists have done their part. These are the people who are taking money out of the country. Whether the government is reacting or is not, it is up to the citizens to deal with that matter. We as journalists, we simply did our job to explain what is happening. We understand the difficulties and the challenges people are facing, but our job just ends there. We are here to inform the citizens about their environment. How they deal with that environment is up to them.
Very interesting. David Ray raises a very interesting question here. He talks about, for example, citizens in Zimbabwe happen perhaps not to be socially or politically aware of their rights. In your view, do you really think that the people of Zimbabwe, or for that matter, across most of Africa, do these people in fact perceive themselves as citizens or subjects? Citizens meaning, obviously, owing allegiance to the state and therefore, in fact, having constitutional rights. You could even say birthrights, for that matter, inalienable rights. Whereas, of course, being a subject, you owe your allegiance to an individual authority and therefore you have no rights, but you get privileges from that particular individual.
You know, my reaction might make Ray laugh. Because I'm going to say that in Zimbabwe, bad as the situation is, it's heaven compared to our situation in Rwanda. Because in Zimbabwe, indeed, the issue was discussed. Panama Papers were discussed. If I'm not mistaken, even authorities promised to investigate. The issues were discussed. But we are talking here countries whereby no one can even dare talk about the issue. Zero, zero. So we are talking here, I'm not even sure that the term subject applies here really, you know.
We sharecropper perhaps?
I really would like to hear Ray and our colleague in Uganda and say something about Rwanda, because actually Monitor in Uganda is a paper that carried the Rwandan story. Rwandan is probably sneaked in. They got the news from Monitor and the East African. That is extraordinary. So, Ray, yes, I agree. Papers, the media did its job. The issue was put in the public domain. Zimbabweans took it as far as they could, safely, without being beaten, and then took it. But we are talking here in a situation whereby you don't even dare. We're talking about a totalitarian state that controls almost all aspects of society, that whereby no one, whereby even everybody self-censors because of danger.
No, but if you talk about a totalitarian state, it becomes very difficult for some people to understand what you are trying to say or what exactly you mean, because the last time I checked, about 2 weeks ago, the Rwandan capital, Kigali, was the host of the World Economic Forum. Can you have the World Economic Forum meeting in North Korea, for example?
Well, didn't we have Olympics in Hitler's time? What was wrong with that? There was the Olympics, events held by totalitarian regimes. There is no question about that. But here is what I mean by totalitarianism. Precisely this, the comparison I made with Zimbabwe and Rwanda. On one hand, of course, both are dictatorships led by one man, one dictator. But in one case, you have a situation whereby actually an issue like this can be discussed. But you have another situation whereby no single newspaper would even dare. By the way, where even newspapers don't exist, the only daily there is owned by the government itself. So that's where we have to now distinguish total control versus control that allows people to breathe. That is really self-explanatory in my view.
Very interesting. Now, Tabu, talk to us about some of your experiences so far. The question, of course, would be that what have you particularly learned from these Panama Papers that you probably you would consider to be unusual or remarkably unique?
First of all, maybe let me just pick up from the earlier comment, which was made in regard to the need for international cooperation in stemming this bias. Mm-hmm. And that brings me to the issue, for instance, that when British Prime Minister was caught on the tape saying that Nigeria was fantastically corrupt, there were those who had argued that indeed President Buhari, who was visiting London, should have asked for apology. And he said he would not. In fact, in his side, he said the money which is stolen from...
I'm sorry, I think... We probably have lost Tabu's Tabu's telephone link up, but I think that he basically wanted to say that Nigerian President General Muhammadu Buhari did not, in fact, want an apology from the British Prime Minister, David Cameron. He actually wanted something, he said, tangible. This is a man, by the way, when he was military head of state back in 1985, you remember, He was able, for example, to hire some Mossad, the former Mossad Israeli intelligence officers, who went to Britain and tried to kidnap Umaru Diko. Umaru Diko, a man who had been a minister under Shagari and had reportedly gotten away with about $5 billion, which were in British banks. Your comment?
That's a complicated one. Actually, I wanted to respond before I get to you back to what David had earlier on talked about what's happening in Zimbabwe, that the authorities are saying that they're investigating. I would want to say to David that we have seen so many commissions being set up to investigate things, but no results have been given to the public after so many years. So, yes, the governments might be saying that they are investigating, but are they really investigating? Who are they investigating? And also, too, why do we need to even invite people, like what we are hearing from the government, to invite those people who have been found in the Panama Papers to come and explain and have a cup of tea or a coffee with the Reserve Bank governor? You know, what are they discussing here? If a crime was committed, why not just let the law take its course? So I see this, that's okay, fine. This thing came out. Yes, they are trying to do some investigations. But these investigations, what are they going to come up with at the end of the day? Are we going to have another committee like what they've done over the years, where they set up committees to investigate with no result? I think that's the sad story that we are always talking about. And I wish...
Can I respond to Ray just a little bit quickly?
Yes, please.
Yeah, Ray, but please pay attention to my comparison. I'm not saying that it's perfect in Zimbabwe, but I'm saying that you have one situation where this issue was discussed versus a fearful nation where no one would even dare talk. You don't see a distinction there, please?
No.
I think the problem is, I don't know, is not that the issue was not... Well, when you talk about discussed, I don't really know to what extent it was discussed. Maybe the issue was acknowledged. Maybe that's what he's trying to say.
Okay, acknowledged, yes. The media reported, yes. But we're talking about total silence, brother.
But so did the Rwandan government statement, saying that whatever your friend, Brigadier Emmanuel Ndahiro, did, in their view, was legit. It was in the interest of the state.
No, but the state, on its own, issued that statement. If you, I ask you to check, even after this discussion, I dare someone show me where even one single newspaper reported Panama incident in Rwanda. Zero.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Ray Choto, Senior Editor, VOA Zimbabwe Service, Dr. David Himbara, author, consultant, and analyst. He joined us via Skype from Toronto, Canada. And last but not least, Tabubu Tajira, Associate Editor, The Daily Monitor, an independent Ugandan newspaper. He joined us via telephone link up from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.